This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited for today's guest. We've had him on the podcast once, I believe, quite some time ago. But it's Brian Yu, Chief Economist, AVP at Central One Credit Union. Really fantastic guest for the podcast.
I feel like this is always a guest that is, in my mind, a real get for us.
Right.
He's super smart. He's focused primarily on Vancouver and British Columbia and really digging into that local economic data. And yeah, it's been a long time, and it was great having him back. This is a great conversation.
Yeah. And we should say we cover the micro to macro kind of Canadian politics. We talk a lot about what's happening in BC business and in the economy and in the province. We talk about surprising things about the housing market, what's going on in real estate, his predictions for Vancouver real estate over the next 1, 3, and 5 years, as well as what's going to happen with interest rates, inflation, the potential of a deep recession. Lots
covered today. Is he optimistic about Vancouver's economy specifically? Why or why not? So,
right.
So it's a good one.
This one, yeah, we cover all the bases. So can't wait for that. But before we get to that, Matt, we have the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. And this week, what is the headline?
The headline this week, Adam, and you know what? When you were gone last week, I went over these mortgage changes a little bit, but I don't want to steal the thunder for the headline from MLA this week. Another change to... Yes. You know, yeah, in case you didn't hear about it, this will be useful. The headline this week is another change to Canadian mortgage rules benefiting pre-sale and first-time home buyers.
Yeah. Okay, Matt. So on September 16th, the federal government amended the Canadian mortgage rules. This was the second time that they've done this year. So under the new rules, a couple things to note. The price cap for insured mortgages, those with less than 20% down, has moved from 1 million to 1.5 million. So now if you're buying a property and you want to put less than 20% down, you have up to $1.5 million from $1 million.
And of course, that's big in markets like Vancouver. I feel like that $1 million mark was always loomed large.
No kidding.
For a lot of people that had great jobs, but it's just that down payment was a killer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. This also means that first-time homebuyers will be allowed to take out an insured mortgage with a 30-year amortization for all types of homes. So that's 30 years up from 25-year amortizations that are offered from conventional lenders.
And again, this strikes me as very good policy. You know, carrying costs in a place like Vancouver are really challenging, especially for first-time home buyers. And if you can just amortize that over the years, another 5 years, it just makes life a little bit easier and allows you to get into the market a little bit sooner. And, yeah, you know, I always think when people talk about, oh, amortization periods, it makes me think of Dustin Woodhouse on the show years ago, who said, you know, you can take on massive amounts of unsecured debt with credit cards at 21% and or go to Money Mart or whatever, and nobody bats an eye. But when you're buying, you know, a place to raise your family, it's when people get concerned about amortization periods.
Yeah, no kidding. And I mean, the trade-off always with the longer amortization is, you know, you get the less payment amounts each month, but of course you're paying more interest over time. So people have to be mindful of that. Big news for pre-sales though, as well included in this, buyers of pre-sales, including investors, are now able to take out an insured mortgage with a 30-year amortization on the pre-construction of property, massively increasing the buying power for pre-sale purchasers. And this, of course, is going to help with developers reaching their financing requirements for each project. And these changes, Matt, come into effect December 15th, 2024.
This is a good news story.
It is a good news story. And if you like that and you want to hear more headlines like that, subscribe to the MLA Newswire. This is a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLAcanada.com to subscribe. Matt, a couple things. And thank you last week for putting out a solo show.
I don't know if you heard it. It was a good one. It was a...
I got to listen. I was in Mexico City for my wife's birthday for a couple nights and ran into, from the industry, Dalen Bouchard. Had dinner with him. He was...
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, in Roma. It was pretty cool. Daloni the Pony, they call him. But he's... anyways, it was...
that is what they call him.
Good seeing him. And it's always funny seeing somebody in a different city from Vancouver.
You know, and now that you mention that, isn't his girlfriend from Mexico?
I think she's from Mexico, yeah. So maybe it's not, but not from Mexico City.
How's his Spanish?
His Spanish was pretty good. I think, he had to rescue me from the server a few times.
Very cool. I had not heard this. Daloni the Pony.
Anyways, always fun. The industry spreads out worldwide.
Any insights gleaned from the Mexico City trip? It's a spectacular city.
You know what's funny though is that, so, you know, that was my second or third time being there. Second time, I think. But, you know, I mean, in the areas that we were kind of in the typical areas where people stay, Condesa, Roma, and our hotel was in Polanco. But it was general thoughts, insanely green. Like the parks are huge and plentiful. The Ubers are like, it's basically like having your own personal driver. Like you basically walk out of a place and you can book an Uber in like 30 seconds. And the Ubers are quite affordable, which is nice. And then also super walkable. And even though the traffic is crazy, I feel like it's a very pedestrian-centric way of living, which just kind of reminds me of Vancouver. Like cars will wait for you to walk across the street.
Which is crazy because isn't it like 30 million people or something like that?
It's huge. Yeah. Yeah. But actually in a lot of ways, felt very progressive like Vancouver in kind of the urban landscape.
Yeah. One, and this is total aside, and we haven't talked about this either, but a lot of expats living there now. I think the word's out on Mexico City. I've heard there's a anti-tourist or anti-expat movement in Mexico City.
I did get pied. No, I didn't get pied. Did you see anything like that?
I didn't feel that.
Everybody was very nice to us wherever we were. That doesn't surprise me because somebody told me, I think it's one of the biggest, and I have no stats to back this up, but the digital nomads have really taken
That's what
on,
I read. Yeah, it was like they've really, I don't want to say invaded, but driving up rents.
Yeah.
And making it.
I could live in that city, though. I feel like I could live in that city.
Well.
Lots of cyclists and like lots of like multimodal transportation similar to Vancouver as well. So kind of felt like home on steroids. So it was fun.
Fantastic. What else do we have before we cut to our talk with Brian Yu?
Matt, well, of course, this podcast is also sponsored, of course, by Scalina Real Estate. That's our real estate team in downtown Vancouver. And I got to say, we have an amazing new listing being featured over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is an amazing detached house, 1121 Kiefer Street, 5-bed, 3-bath. So originally built 1905, but a studs out renovation in 2017. And this is in the vibrant and community-rich neighborhood of Strathcona. Your steps to breweries, Michelin star restaurants, McLean Park, Commercial Drive. This is the cat's meow.
You know what? The other thing about this new listing is it's right by the new development assembly where everyone took possession, about a month ago. You were telling me...
It feels different. It feels different. And I mean, not that it ever felt, I'm not saying better or worse. I'm just saying it feels different. I went to a block party
there. More people.
Yeah. I went to a block party there, and actually Jordan McDonald, who Fabric, who developed Assembly. Yeah. But he was there. Like he's that project is one of the nicest projects I think I've seen in Vancouver in a very long time in terms of like a boutique, really, really beautiful. Like you walk so by unique. And you're like, wow, so unique, yeah. So awesome. But anyways, he was there. And I mean, like this is, I mean, Jordan's going to have a long development career in Vancouver, but he was there around, you know, shaking hands and talking to people and they're kind of for the block party. But I got to say, there is like, there's a lot more activity in that immediate pocket of like, because you think about it, I can't remember how many units are in Assembly, but a lot of people just moved in. So it's like, it's like an injection of new people into this, not a huge area. And it's a lot of like young and really cool people, families, that sort of thing. So like, for me, it's like, it's a complete net positive for the area. And it's like a stone's throw from this house.
Yeah, no, it's like a block away, right? That's fantastic. Well, head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com to check out the photos and the video for 1121 Kiefer. And while you're there, Adam, hit sell with us, because if you hit sell with us, what happens is you get an immediate download for the sold plan. Adam, I feel like, you know, I did the heavy lifting last week. You're doing it this week. But tell us about Sold Plan.
Matt, Sold Plan is our most downloaded document to date. It's a step-by-step guide for getting top dollar in the shortest amount of time for your property. And really, it's evergreen. This is stuff that we have been doing now for almost 15 years in selling hundreds of homes, where essentially it's not rocket science, but you have to make sure that you take care of everything up front to make sure that your home presents best for this market. And there are steps to get it.
There are steps. And, these systems work.
Exactly. They definitely
stand
work.
Stand on and the that's shoulder a free, of giants.
It's a free guide. It's a free guide over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where you can find that and all of our listings. And Matt, without further ado, why don't we cut to our conversation this week with really, I mean, just such a brilliant guy, Brian Yu.
Brian Yu, Chief Economist at Central One.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Brian Yu. He is the chief economist at Central One Credit Union. How you doing, Brian?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking the time, Brian. And we should say past guest fan favorite, but it was a long time ago you were on the show, so we're happy to have you back.
Yeah, no, it's great to be here. Yeah, time flies, so definitely happy to run again.
and lots to talk about. But Brian, maybe for some of our listeners that haven't heard you on the show previously, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So, you know, professionally, I am chief economist and AVP at Central One Credit Union. We essentially are owned by the credit unions across BC and Ontario, and we provide them, you know, my group provides economic services, but we're also providing a bunch of stuff around treasury services, digital banking. So really serving the credit union system. Myself, I'm not originally from Vancouver. I'm from Winnipeg, so I'm from the prairies. I moved out here quite some many years ago. So that's all about me at this point.
Very good. From the prairies to to Kits, right? I think I used to follow you on Twitter. I don't use Twitter as much as I used to, but I feel like you live in Kits from memory.
I do. Yeah, I moved out here a few years back, and it's hard to move anywhere else once you kind of move into the Kits area. It's so walkable, right?
Well, maybe we'll start with a kind of broad question for you, Brian. And how are we doing?
I guess the question is what context, right? When we're thinking around the overall economy, it's probably not the greatest time at this point. We are kind of in this interesting phase where the economy is still growing. We're still seeing growth. Consumers, households are still grappling now with these relatively high interest rates for consumers who are getting their mortgages renewed, or they're facing those kind of heavy rate shocks. And while we're still growing, what we also know is that people probably feel a little bit poorer these days. They feel a little bit stressed out. Per capita GDP is negative. We're seeing a lot of stresses around labor markets, not as hot as it was. Companies not hiring as much as they did before. So it's not a terrible time. It's just, I would say it's a pretty weak time at this point for a lot of households.
Do people, in your mind, feel worse than it is, or is it the opposite?
I think at some level, when people have been kind of grappling for the last couple of years now, really since the inflationary spiral kind of took hold, we're back to normal inflation now, but people have seen their prices go up, food prices go up, and things that they kind of look at on an everyday basis has been quite a bit of a shock. So it's definitely had some impact in terms of the psyche, even though wages have gone up over this period. So I think that people are feeling probably a little bit worse than it really is. And it's also really really kind of dependent, right? It depends upon what your housing or household status is ultimately. If you're younger or if you're on some fixed incomes, it's challenging because you're facing those hard hit of home prices, high rents, high food prices. But if you were somebody who possibly either had a fixed mortgage or you're sort of maybe older, you have a lot of housing wealth and you don't have any mortgage, it's fine. It's a challenge, but it's not substantially a huge problem at that point. So it really depends on who you are.
Just thinking about, because a lot of that is kind of, especially around housing, is Vancouver specific. And I know you're based in Vancouver, but you're looking at data from around the country. Is Vancouver faring better than other places in Canada? Or are we worse off economically? What's your take on Vancouver in that broader context?
I think we've lagged a bit. I think that when we look at some segments that kind of had these ups and downs in the economy, like technology did well in the front end of the pandemic, they're not doing so well now. We're not seeing a lot of hiring. On net job growth in Vancouver relative to some of our peers, Calgary and Toronto, even Winnipeg, what we do see is that over the last few years, we just haven't seen the same type of employment growth over this period of time either. What's the rationale for that? There's partly it's because it's expensive, but people have been kind of making those moves around the country. They've moved over to Calgary. So you've seen a little bit of that net flight potentially to other cities, and it is really a big issue around the pandemic has been just the housing affordability kind of potentially pushing people out. They're pushing, historically we've seen some of them move into interior markets on the island markets. But the reality is that BC as a whole is quite expensive relative to even other metro areas. So if we look at a market like Calgary, yes, we're over 600,000 now, but that average price isn't all that different than what you're paying on average in an area like Kamloops or Kelowna is even more expensive. So there's a lot of shifting of affordability as people have been able to do remote work over this period, or at least go to hybrid mode at some level as well. So we haven't been performing as well. Our business counts in BC are pretty flat year over year, so we're not generating a lot of new businesses compared to some other provinces. But over, I would say, BC as a whole, however, we've actually done relatively well just due to major projects and other large investments.
Brian, in thinking about the real estate market, we have seen an uptick in supply and inventory over the last 6 to 8 months. The market definitely has softened, although we've just seen an interest rate cut and a lot of people talking about the potential of a busier fall market or a busier 2025. What's your take on the real estate market right now?
Yeah, I think we're soft. It's we haven't seen, I think, as much down pressure as I think many might have thought, given that rate, the rate moves that we saw over the last couple of years. When we go from sub 2% fixed rates over into that close at 6% rate environment, you would kind of expect a lot more gyrations in the market. But what we've really seen is that outside of some of that give back from the that sort of earlier pandemic surge, we've seen it pretty resilient in terms of pricing. So very soft in terms of sales flows. There's not a lot happening on the ground in terms of actually buying and selling a property, but we're also not seeing that huge downside pressure in terms of pricing. And so I think it kind of speaks to kind of the environment that we're in, is that it's still a highly desirable market. People want to live in Vancouver. People want to live in the region. It's very expensive. And what's constraining that fact, the constraining factor is primarily the higher interest rates that we've seen for the last couple of years. People are on the sidelines. We've had high levels of population growth over this period, you know, that people are have been paused, put pause on their ability to either upsize or go from rental to home ownership because of higher rates. So that's kind of kept that sales flow on the sidelines a bit. But again, sellers are also kind of, I think they're digging in their heels a bit too, as much as we think the market is weak. You know, you have sales to active listings ratio still, you know, 14% to 15%. So it's not low and still relatively balanced. But overall, it's that low sales, relatively high price environment that we're kind of sifting through right now. And I do think that will start to improve in terms of the sales flow as these rates decline, and we are start seeing some of the other policies in play that are looking to boost housing demand over the next year as well.
You know, one thing that strikes me, Brian, about sellers and about a recent note that you had on in regards to the Fed's cut. Was this idea at the end of your note, you said something to the effect of the magnitude of the Bank of Canada rate cuts might be dampened by the idea that they're going to stoke housing again. And it seems like in Vancouver amongst sellers, there's this feeling that, you know, it might not be tomorrow, but you can wait this out and demand is there. It's just getting to where we need to be on an interest rate. On an interest rate level, I should say. Is it just an interest rate story? It seems like in your mind, at this point, the real estate market kind of hinges on the Bank of Canada.
Well, I think the story hinges on a couple of things. Number one, that underlying demand that's out there. We haven't, when we look at population growth, there is that component of it, which is just demand that is sitting on the sidelines. We don't know how much down payments are sitting there either, but we know that net savings in the economy is high, deposits at institutions are relatively elevated as well. So, you know, there is that demand out there. We also see on the supply side as well, is that as much as we talk about building new product, we're still completing units at a relatively sluggish pace right now. So yes, housing starts were relatively elevated last year. We've seen this more of a pendulum swinging to more rental home construction because it's kind of made more sense while pre-sales haven't. So, and I think that's going to start constraining the build out of a new product in the next couple of years. I'm actually a little surprised that we've remained as resilient as we have in terms of overall housing starts in BC and to an extent in Vancouver for the past couple of years. But I do think that's going to turn. So that supply side environment, I think, is going to be a constraining factor. And it means that yes, you will have people coming off the sidelines when rates come off. They will try to get into the market, but facing a supply side environment, which is still pretty constrained. And I think a lot of sellers recognize that there is that demand on the sideline. There's not a lot of pressure for most owners to have to sell. It's a question of, do you want to sell? And if you do sell, where are you going ultimately?
I'm just thinking there's a lot of people will say, have been saying in various, you know, think about on X perhaps, but I've been reading a lot of people saying that if the rates come down, think about how bad the economy has to be to get there. Is there a balancing act in your mind in terms of like, is the worst over in terms of the economy, or are we heading into more dire circumstances?
So for the economy, I think there is a couple of things there is that I actually do not want to see rates go back to zero. That would be a dire strait. That would be a scenario where the economy is contracting probably outright. And at that point, we have a severe recession occurring. But I think at one point, what we're trying to see here is just number one, a normalization of that. The rates are too high at this point. If we think about inflation sitting, whichever measure you want to look at, 2% headline, or excluding mortgage interest costs, closer to 1.2%. And we have a Bank of Canada that's still sitting around 4%. Those real rates are very tight. So they want to get back to something at least more neutral. And that neutral rate sitting around 2.75, maybe a touch lower. So we're going to get there. It's just a question of timing. And of course, as part of this is going to be priced into those fixed rates as well. But there's a lot of concern around the economy, even in the U.S., around how growth might stall. And that's putting downward pressure on rates. So I don't want to see those rates come off too quickly or too much, because that is probably recessionary. But it's just a normalization. And I think the current environment of where fixed rates are and those variable rates, obviously, are too high. And they will come down, and not because I say so, but because I think that the markets and bond yields are all coming off in order to support that momentum.
So, thinking that we're in an environment where rates are going to come down, how does this play out in your mind in the Metro Vancouver real estate market in terms of buyer demand? Is it like rates kind of trickle downwards and the buyers trickle back into the market and sales volume kind of increases at a gradual pace? Or do we potentially see, a herd mentality at some point? Is there the potential for those demand shocks that we've seen, in 2017 during COVID, 2016, I guess, in single family?
So first, I think it's going to remain highly unaffordable in the market. So the constraining factor in my view is affordability. Prices, over the course of the pandemic, they haven't come off. They haven't come back to where they were. We've seen those big shocks, 30, 40% above where we were pre-pandemic still in terms of price levels. We also have interest rates, which are higher than they were pre-pandemic. So that affordability path still remains a big stressor for a lot of potential buyers. They will be, they'll see some potential areas that they can get into the market as those rates come off, but they'll still be constrained. They built higher down payments over the last couple of years, my view is, given the net savings we've seen. But it's going to be a challenge to get in. So I don't think we're going to see this massive boom in terms of the sales flow. I think that flow does gradually move higher as we kind of move. And when I say gradually, I mean getting at least back to something more normalized. That could be 5, 10% increase in sales. We are so low, especially on a population-adjusted basis, that we can see significantly higher sales at this point, and still not call it a boom. The concern I think I'd have, again, it goes back to that supply constraint as well, that yes, inventory is building at this point, and I think it's building more around, whether it's pre-sale, potential for risks around pre-sale, condo completion. So there's those risks there. Given that inventory itself and market's relatively well balanced at this point, and a lot of that inventory buildup we've seen is because there's been so few sales. It's not necessarily new listings are through the roof. It's largely because things stall and you just kind of accumulate your overall inventory over time. So I do think that actually starts to come off, that those inventory upside will come off as those sales pick up. And we still start to see that move up in terms of demand. And then ultimately pricing starts to pick up in, I think, maybe 25, 2026. It's more vigorous pricing risk because I just don't think our supply side of our housing market is going to adapt as well or quickly as we think.
So just to be clear there, you're thinking when your price appreciation starts in, but late 2025, 2026?
Into 2025. I think once that, we will see those sales flow, they will pick up. We will see the inventory, in my view, come off. And again, it's that there's going to be some pressure on the market. I think it'll depend. We don't know exactly what types of homes are ultimately going to be in the highest demand at this point. I think a lot of first-time buyers or entry-level are really wanting to get in, though. And I think that as you are very much rate driven, and you're looking now also that there is potential if you have high enough income, you can get mortgage insurance on up to $1.5 million. It does start to change things about. You don't need that huge down payment anymore either. You can still get to the market with something a little bit, or you can get the market with a little bit less of that financial heft.
So I just want to maybe drill down a little bit there on appreciation, because it feels like, you know, there's always people saying, you know, prices are too high in Vancouver. I feel like for the last decade, well, probably for the last 30 years, prices are too high, right? It can't get any worse than this, can't get any higher than this. And we've kind of consistently seen people be like, I can't believe we just did another 10%. I can't believe we did another 15%. Right now, I feel like it's in a lot of people's minds, it's kind of hard to imagine those types of price appreciation jumps. Do you see there being room for that in the next, say, 3 to 5 years, like where we're going to see considerable? And I'm thinking mainly like around pre-sales, right? Because there's the reason a lot of investors like pre-sales was, you know, you could leverage that opportunity for that price appreciation. And if that's not there, those guys sit on the sidelines, basically, or a lot of them do.
Yeah, like I do think that there is that risk. And when I say substantial, I don't necessarily mean 10, 15% increases. I think we can reasonably see maybe 5, 10% in a given year. And whether prices are too high, I think you're right. Everybody has said for the last 10, 15 years, 30, 20 years, that prices have been too high. When I was a kid, when I lived in the prairies, everybody said, hey, let's go to Vancouver. We never afford there because it's too high. And that's when houses in North Vancouver were $350,000. So is there room? I do think that there remains room for overall prices or average price, especially if we adjust it for, you know, land size and things like that, there is considerable price appreciation, I think, left to go in the market. Is that a good thing? For a first-time buyer, no. It's for low equity buyers, no, it's not. It's a challenging to get into these markets. But I do think that just given a lot of our constraints, and as much as we want to keep on building up and out and everywhere, we'll have a hard time, I think, trying to meet that demand so that those pricing profiles can go higher. And, you know, how fast? We've gone periods in which, you know, thinking about the 1990s even, that we have seen periods in which prices really flatlined for, and that was during the leaky condo crisis. We've had some the Asia financial crisis as well. But, when we think about it at this point in terms of, you know, declining interest rates, still elevated or high level of the population growth that we've seen just over the last couple of years that we're still building into the system, that is going to put ongoing pressure on the pricing side of this, of the economy. And also looking at that through the other lens is that what we've seen as much around financial risk in BC, also could be have BC numbers primarily, is that we haven't seen much in the way of mortgages and arrears in this market. We haven't seen a lot of delinquencies. We've seen net household, net worth still rising. So financially, you know, if you've had housing, you're actually quite well off and you've continued to do well. It's really if you're young, you've had issues. But I think over the next five years or so, we're also going to be seeing that ongoing transfer of flows of funds from intergenerational transfers from older individuals to their children, grandchildren. And again, that's one of those things that relatively more unique, I think, even to a market like this, is that because there's so much housing wealth there and equity, that will pass down as well. And it's quite a considerable amount.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP2020.
Brian, we just saw the Fed drop rates by 50 basis points, which was surprising to a lot of people. Can you talk about the interplay between the Bank of Canada and the Fed and what this might mean for the upcoming meeting? I believe it's October 23rd, is that right? October 23rd, yeah.
Yeah, we're coming up on it. So the interplay around Bank of Canada, I think, again, earlier this year when we knew that the Canadian economy wasn't performing as well, we were underperforming the U.S. economy. There was a lot of concern around, could we drop rates if the Fed didn't? Or how much could we drop it here, given our economy, given that slowdown? So that risk around has kind of gone off the table a bit. There's no real worries around Canadian dollar, slumping as a result of this because the Fed has already moved at this point. So there is a little bit more potential for the Bank of Canada to implement a 50 basis point cut. They've been pretty tight-lipped about it, so it's not... they're not going either way at this point. They're one of the reasons for the Fed is that, of course, they have a dual mandate. They are fixated both on inflation and on full employment. And they've kind of looked at inflation as being, that mission accomplished there potentially. And now they're kind of focused on ensuring that there's no unemployment doesn't go any higher. Bank of Canada doesn't necessarily have that same mandate, although, they kind of do flow in together. The bank could cut the 50. It wouldn't be at this point. I don't think it would be all that surprising if they did. They will, our view is simply that they will be moving towards their neutral rate. We don't think they have to go below it. We have it sitting around 2.75. We'll probably have to move our forecast up a little bit. We had it around mid-year, the third quarter next year, that they'd be hitting that point. But just given that the flow of information and the U.S. Fed probably looking, tackling closer to 3% by next year and the next year, that it does give a lot more room now for the Bank of Canada to cut relatively quickly without worrying about the Canadian dollar too much.
So, Brian, in thinking about the potential of some larger rate cuts coming this year, and if housing takes off, what does that mean? Is the sole purpose of the Bank of Canada to be monitoring inflation, or does the activity in the housing market actually impact their decisions?
It will to a couple of extent. We know that shelter has been a big part of the inflation story for the last year. It's still driving those numbers pretty significantly. As they cut rates, you will see those ease off just to the mortgage interest. But there is potential for that the bank might be a little bit concerned around, again, household debt, financial imbalances, and potential for the housing market to pick back up and prices due to lower rates. But I think they'll be looking at that through that lens of kind of talking down the market a bit. For the impact of on the inflation side, it's going to be really relatively mild because it kind of feeds through inflation through homeowner replacement costs, not directly through higher MLS prices or higher prices in the market as a factor of inflation. So what we'll still see is that drag from lower mortgage rates, mortgage interest costs. We'll probably see some easing off of the rental market as well, just because, they'll probably see fewer students in the market. And even though, again, house prices are probably going to increase as a result of these lower rates, it's not going to influence the overall headline inflation all that much. So they may give it, maybe hat tip to it a little bit potentially and say there is that risk, that fear. So that could tell the market that we're not going to be cutting as quickly. And that might be a risk to this in terms of the overall rate momentum and how quickly they get there.
You just touched on a topic that I've been thinking about lately, and I wish I could say I understood it better, but maybe I'll put it to you, Brian. You're talking about, prices coming off in the rental market, and listings, as I understand, rental listings in Burnaby and Vancouver are up, give or take around 40% since April. So we've seen rising rental inventory alongside inventory for sale. What does this mean? And maybe, I was just thinking, what is this? Does this tell us something about the local economy, where the city's at, the housing crisis? One thing, and I'll just preface this by saying, I was thinking about when sales, you know, started to slow down, the rental market was still really, really hot for a long time, which led me to believe, you know, oh, there's this is the housing crisis in action. No one can afford to buy, but, you know, there's so much demand. And it, now that demand seems to be waning. So can you just give us a, you know, a primer on this?
Yeah, so I think there is somewhat of a distinct, they're connected, but I think that the rental market is somewhat distinct from the home ownership market. You know, it is the place where people go, and in many cases, either by choice because they don't want to own, or by necessity because they can't own yet, they don't have the financial might. And over the last year or 2 years, I think that the population inflows have been a huge driver of this. And there has been, of course, a lot of temporary non-permanent residents coming through into the economy, providing that lift. So I think that that's probably provided a huge driver of what we saw in terms of rental demand and the rental growth in pricing, anywhere from around 8-9% year over year, not the allowable limit that the governments have put out, but the actual amount that we're seeing in sort of CPI rents and things like that. But there's also that expectations in play here, because we have seen that in terms of the housing starts, we've seen definitely a pendulum swinging a little bit more towards building out of rental. There's purpose-built rentals first. More of that share of overall housing starts in the metro area has been rental this past couple of years now. We've also seen, I think, probably some investors looking at that. Maybe there are those investors who haven't been able to sell their properties or decided against selling it because they not enough interest, so putting their units on the market. So I think that rental constraints are probably easing off, and it's a healthy thing. We've had so many years now that rental markets have been exceptionally too tight. Like, you know, I look at Kitsilano, for example, when people are paying $3,000 for one bedroom in the market, you know, $4,500 for two bedrooms. These are very astronomical rents for a market like ours as well, given overall incomes and the like, and very hard for people to save at that point too. So I think it's healthy that we are seeing that inventory increase a bit more. But there is an interplay, I think, going forward here, is that with the, you know, the housing sales market has slowed. One question will be, as things pick up, how many of those rental units are secondary or, you know, are investor-owned suites for the time being that will ultimately make its way back into the sales side of the environment of the economy as well. So right now, there's probably a little bit of this imbalance occurring, and especially given policy rate, given policy interest rates and things like that. But I do think that they will somewhat come back in balance as some of those units go back into the inventory for sale and ultimately do get sold. The other component around some of the challenges around home ownership side and there, why there could be distinct with the rental market pool is that also types of units. You know, we've seen a lot of builds in many years for one bedrooms, bachelor suites. I recall years ago, a couple of years back, when we were sort of in the last boom of the cycle, everything was a bachelor's and one bedrooms. I was looking at Metrotown, I'm like, wow, people are paying $1,000 a square foot for 450 square feet. And the type of homes that would be great for students, great for young people, not great for the cycle of individuals who are probably looking to build out family homes and the like, right? So again, a little bit of a different type of a market that possibly, as we've shifted away from people, again, more people wanting to go into family housing versus that push against maybe Airbnb types of product, investor-owned investor product, and just pure rental play as well, become a little bit more inventory bloated potentially over the short term.
Brian, you talked about the generational wealth transfer as being something that will probably continue to drive expensive markets like Vancouver and Toronto. How does the immigration story tie into demand in the real estate market?
Yeah, very challenging. We don't really know how much people have when they come in. You can theoretically bring as much money as you want when you're immigrating here. There's no issue about that. I do think, you know, historically, when we think about that the income, price to income ratios in this market are somewhat out of whack, and they have historically have been. And part of that was likely due to those cyclical flows or the sort of those flows of different immigration groups that came through Vancouver. Vancouver is I call it a self-selection type of a city. Like, you don't tend to move to a market like Vancouver unless you have some financial heft, at least in various cycles that we've seen. So, you know, that is a part of it. And it does, I think, has partly driven at least some of the pricing flows as well that we've seen over time, on top of the overall issues around supply and land issues that we see, or land availability constraints that we see here. New immigration, we don't know. I think right now I'm looking at it mostly as through the lens of, you know, how much demand is there ultimately? Is it a wealth flow demand, or is it more income generated demand? People coming here as skilled workers or lower skilled workers and temporary non-permanent workers who might have to go back at some point, right? So we don't know. I think right now there's been a lot of that pressure in terms of the rental markets as a reflection of that kind of flow as well.
Brian, just thinking about the local economy, I feel like we talk to all sorts of people in the industry and economists that, you know, are focused on various aspects of the economy. But I feel like in my mind, you're dialed into the local economy a little bit more than a lot of folks we talk to. Are you more optimistic right now about Vancouver than you were, say, 6 months ago, a year ago, or the opposite?
Great question. Optimism around Vancouver. I think that we have a lot of great ingredients. I always consider things around, we have a very, you know, a vibrant tech sector. It is vibrant. We have a lot of good regional companies here, great localized companies as well. It's a little bit of a challenge in that sector, but we are trying to grow that area. I think one of the concerns around Vancouver has been and continues to be, it's kind of connected to the overall issues around housing, is that because land costs and costs here are so high, in order to run businesses, in order to find industrial land, in order to do big things, if you want to call it that, it's very challenging for a lot of organizations to be able to continue to stay here and grow here because they can't get industrial land. They can't get maybe commercial space or whatever the case may be, enough of it. So they end up moving their facilities potentially to Alberta, where it's cheaper. Similarly, again, the same challenge around them is that affordability aspect in the region is really, we've seen that ongoing, you know, we're still going to gain a lot of people through immigration. We are an immigration city. We have a lot of that. But we also lose people to lower priced regions as well. And that has continuously been a concern for the region. You know, how do we get to something better? We have to be more productive. Obviously, it's a catchphrase right now. Everybody wants to be more productive. But the question is obviously how, what type of companies are we talking about? And there's no clear indication at this point that there's a lot of growth occurring. And that would be my concern. We are seeing fruits of growth in areas like Calgary. They're building their tech sector. We still see a lot more head offices that we see in Toronto. Those are you know, even in bad times, you're still going to have a lot of corporate head office jobs. But in Vancouver, I think we need to really look at that and say, well, what is our competitive advantage here? And it's not always clear. It just can't always be the mountains and the ocean, right?
Oh, I was waiting for that. Oh God, that's I was hoping for something a little more optimistic than that.
it's a tough time, right? Because I also think it's around, it's not localized per se. I think it's, when we look at sort of the global economy and sort of where things are kind of slowing down a bit, we are benefiting that we are in a beautiful area that drives a lot of tourism flows. But as sort of global economies slow a bit and we kind of come in this slow period, there is that risk that we are going to see some slowdown on those areas too. Accommodation, food services, we've seen the employment numbers not being that great. And part of that is just post-COVID, we never really bounced back. But that's a challenge here. There's, we'll see those issues around port strikes and all these types of things that are on our transportation and warehousing sectors. We just saw another grain terminal or something that just more recently. So these are kind of the challenges for region. It's not necessarily, these are a lot of them short term, but they are challenges for the area. And what we really have to kind of rely on, I think, going forward is the dynamic individuals and businesses are willing to open up here, but we have to create those types of conditions for them to do that.
Well put. I just have one more question. I don't know, Adam, do you have, I go,
I think we probably have the same question, but you go ahead.
Yeah. Well, actually, I kind of wanted to do maybe a two-parter here just because of your larger kind of focus on the economy. The headline for an economic headline for 2025 coming out of Vancouver and predictions for the real estate market in 2025, maybe through the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, I think one of the headlines, probably it actually kind of is tied to housing. I think that, you know, a headline is that housing doesn't crash. I think that's literally, I think there is, I don't think we're going to see that type of environment occur. There's no, you know, it was going to be remaining, in our view, a very expensive market in Vancouver. As much as everybody wants to see affordability improve, and we will see some affordability measures continuously come into play. I think those are important that we will see. I think governments will be looking at different ways to boost the social or the sort of the public side of housing. And we'll see more work coming through the private side as rates come lower. We'll start to see more of those projects come forward. But I just don't think it's going to be enough over this period of time. And I think if we want to see that affordability, we'll continue to do what we've done in the past, which is, my view is still, unfortunately, I think in some cases, building smaller. We'll still be building hopefully more efficiently. And that will be kind of ways in which we're trying to increase the supply. But I just don't think that the demand side of our economy, or at least in the housing market, is going to lead to substantial improvement or decline in overall prices in this environment.
And for the real estate market, are we looking at modest growth over the next few years, or do you see some
shocks? And put a number on it?
No, I think it's in terms of our 2025, I can see us growing in terms of our overall pricing, for example, here around 5%. I think we'll see a pickup as we see that demand from the rates. And rates will be a significant factor. And I always go back to some aspects that there is an innate demand. There is a desire for homeownership. Let's not get around that. People want to own. They want to be in the market. And over time, when rates come down, that will take hold and people will do what they can to get in. And as I said, there's a lot of supply policies, but we're also seeing more demand policies that were likely to stoke some of that demand activity as well. So yeah, it's always sometimes good to be early in the market, but you never know what early is and what late is.
Well, maybe we'll leave it there. But Brian, we do have this segment, the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Sure, let's see if I have any lighthearted.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark.
So question number one is a book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'm just finishing up The Anxious Generation right now. It's a little deeper. It's not too fun, but it's a good way. I have two kids, so it's always good for me to understand.
Oh, is what that the NYU prof's book?
Yes. Yes, it is. About screen time and how the iPhone generations and social media change everything.
I just took my daughter to Inside Out 2, which is all about anxiety, although it was 2 hours of screen time as well. So I don't know.
I did see Inside Out 2. It's interesting.
Scary times.
Yeah, no kidding. Question number two, Brian. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has improved your life?
I think trying to sleep more. I think that's been definitely helpful. I don't do it as much as I probably should, but I think sleeping more and just being a little bit more awake in the morning is actually a great game changer as well.
Can I just say, I was thinking about this the other day when I achieved my 8 hours according to my watch, that in the 90s and early 2000s, do you not remember it was like the CEO culture of 3.5 hours, 4 hours, this guy doesn't sleep.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
you all, I was pretty young. I was, you know, whatever, 20, but there was like a culture of you feel guilty about getting a proper sleep almost, right? It's kind of amazing now that you can brag to work colleagues about how much time you spend in bed.
Well, I think it's like I have two kids who are two years apart. So I've had those 5-6 years of never getting it anyway. So now it's just like, oh, this is great. And I feel so much better.
Right. Question number 3, Brian, what have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation?
Oh, binge watched 9-9 as a good one. 9-9 on Netflix, comedy. And also Nip Tuck. I've been watching some of that on Amazon Prime, and it's an old one, but I was like, oh, this is dark comedy.
It was a big show when it was out, but I feel like that's probably 15 years old. That show.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's quite yeah. I mean, we've probably ran through most of all the new shows and all the streaming. So we've been trying to find anything from the old shows. Really, oh, this might be interesting. It has more than one season.
I bet that's actually outdated compared to what how much cosmetic surgery is happening nowadays. I bet Nip.
I imagine. Yeah. This is interesting. Some weird stories. And also one was like Blue Bloods was the other one. It has like 14 seasons.
So, Blue Bloods. I'm writing these down. Okay.
Right on. Next question for you, Brian. When you're not binging and you're listening to music, what are you listening to lately? Favorite band or music?
Oh, wow. I actually gotten to the age where I never listen to anything new. So I tend to go back to, you know, listen to go back to Green Day and some Queensryche if I can. And I look for when music was good.
And last but not least, something that you've purchased for under $1,500 that has had a positive impact on your life.
Oh, $1,500. Oh, I think I might have probably said the exact same thing before. A barbecue. That to me is the
said that actually.
I think it always is my answer. It changes my life just having not having to use our kitchen.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it there. But Brian, how can people find out more about what you're up to? And of course, Central One Credit Union.
Yeah. I don't go on Twitter as X or as much as I used to, but LinkedIn, find me there. Also, centralone.com and our economic insights. It's kind of where you find all of our external documents and our reports. So yeah, take a look.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, Brian. That was great having you back. And really appreciate your time. That was fascinating.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with Chief Economist over at Central One, Brian Yu.
Really enjoyed having Brian on the program. He's kind of the guy where if he writes something or comments on something, people listen in this part of the world. Really, really bright and a thought leader when it comes to economists in BC, right?
Absolutely. And the other thing is, I think we've talked a little bit about all these people migrating, like I think a Wendy Waters and a few others, but Brian Yu is one guy. It's the reason I check in Brendan Augmentson, but Brian Yu is one of the reasons I actually am on LinkedIn more now, because he's posting all the time, super interesting stuff. They're always putting out really concise kind of takes on what's going on and super useful information. So definitely connect with him over there. But no, there was so many takeaways there. It's great to talk to somebody who's kind of like everyone in Vancouver, kind of somehow not
in real estate, but real estate adjacent, and get their kind of take on what's going on. And yeah, it was a fantastic conversation.
Yeah, really enjoyed that. Matt, what else do we have before we cut for the day?
What else do we have? We have our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. So head over there at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for all things real estate related. We have things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer with VIP access to pre-sales, deal of the month. We have stats going out, different types of stats. Dig into sub-markets like, you know, your neighborhood, your price point. Find out exactly what is going on in those pockets that you're interested in. Those go out every month. We also have, of course, private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It is available to sign up for at our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us. This is the best way to be monitoring, researching and monitoring real estate in the region. And you're going to get listing updates. Like I said, realtor level information. And now is the time to be monitoring. What an interesting time.
Yeah. You know what? I feel like Brian seemed, I will say, relatively optimistic about
get in before that 5 to 10% bump. Get in.
Yeah, exactly. There's no time like the present. If you want to talk about that or anything else, give me a shout at 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, that Mexico City line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Dalen might answer. all right. Well, have a great week, guys. And we'll see you next week with another great episode.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.